This is Mark Strassman, a reporter with Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak with Matt Stone, who is an elected city council member in Warner Robins, Georgia. And as though that weren't enough, he's also the chairman of the Wireless Houston County Committee. Welcome very in a very friendly way to Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why don't you give us just a little bit about your background and essentially how you came to be the point person in this forward-looking project that we're going to talk about?
I was elected to the city council a couple of years ago. I was only 20 when I was elected, and so I'm part of the generation that's really harnessing technology to do new and exciting things.
You can type with your thumbs?
About a year ago, some folks from Intel came to one of our high schools, in fact, the high school I had graduated from, to present them with some tablet PCs and start a very innovative project. And
what's the name of that high school, so we can make it famous?
Houston County High School.
Houston County High School.
And they were recently named an Intel School of Distinction, one of the top two schools for technology in the whole country.
Right.
So they've done a lot of great things. But at any rate, their representative from Intel spoke about WiMAX and 802.16 wireless technology and made a very compelling case for how we could use it as a municipal government to better serve our citizens and offer businesses cost avoidance from lease line replacement type of model. And I was very intrigued by it, and so we formed a committee of folks, interested business leaders, state representatives, and local government leaders to investigate the technology and begin an initiative to bring wireless broadband to all of our counties.
In a sense, it was to provide for the students as they graduated the same kind of dense internet access environment that they were starting to experience in school.
Right, exactly. We see a huge divide in most good schools that are using technology. The kids have wireless environments and smart boards and tablet PCs to play with, and then they go home, and they've still got to do dial-up. And so there's a disconnect there, and we wanted to start bridging that.
All right. And so who all was on this committee?
We had three state representatives, one of whom is the governor's floor leader. So we had some political heavyweights. We had a representative from each of the local governments, each of the chambers of commerce within our county, and then just some interested education leaders and some other folks, really the opinion leaders and shapers for our county we wanted on the committee. And we have operated as a formal committee since about November of last year. Each of the three local city governments and then the county have all passed a unanimous resolution of support for the project. And so it's really been a partnership effort all the way from the beginning.
Is the committee still in business as we speak?
It is. Now, with any type of deployment like this, Mark, you've got peaks and surges in terms of public activity. And when Intel initially got involved, there was lots of press, and they came down and did some community forums to help educate the community about wireless. And then they, went away, so to speak, and we spent a lot of time working with Siemens Business Services and Greg Richardson, who did a terrific job on the consulting end. And that's not a lot of glitzy, glamorous stuff, but it was critical to moving the project forward.
Now
we're in the process of pursuing the recommendations that Greg gave us in terms of the cooperative wholesale model and then the public-private consortium model where private money gets involved.
Okay, so what did the committee consider its charge or its mission when it got started?
Greg, the committee was formed to, first of all, really examine WiMAX technology and see if it was a fit for Houston County, which we did make that finding early on, and then lead the effort through educating the community, through building and maximizing partnerships with companies like Intel and Siemens and Alverion, and bring about a deployment, whether through public dollars or through private investment, make it happen in Houston County so that we have the infrastructure in place to become the first mobile wireless county in America in the 2006-2008 time frame.
Okay, now what things are you trying to achieve by becoming the first mobile broadband wireless county in the country?
Right. Well, first, it's really a process. When we deploy the network later this year, it will be fixed, broadband wireless,
right,
which we're all familiar with. That will serve a huge service to our defense contractors. We have, because of the Air Force Base, that calls our community home, We have about 300 defense contracting offices in Houston County. Those folks are currently paying up to $1,500 a month for a T1 line, which is outrageous. And we feel that there's a business case that can be profitably made by charging those same companies half that, you know, at least, for the same quality of service using wireless technology. So the first step is really an economic development piece. It's to help our existing businesses grow and expand and become a huge hook to bring in new businesses into our community. There's also an education piece, which we've already somewhat touched on, creating a hot community zone instead of just hot spots at Starbucks or what have you. And then eventually to offer this mobility that's going to be, I think, as impactful to technology as the Internet was. I think it's going to fundamentally change the way that we interface with technology and with devices and computers and things of that nature. So we want our citizens to be able to go to the football game on Friday night and do an email or check their stocks while they're watching their son, you know, or daughter play baseball or softball or whatever.
Or send email to the coach about what he ought to be doing.
That's right. A little recommendation in real time. But,
yes.
But provided a better quality of life and also the latest abilities in technology. We think our citizens deserve that, and we want that infrastructure to be in place.
What's the relationship between having this available everywhere all the time, broadband and wireless, and the competitiveness of your area, especially compared to let's say, the second broadband wireless community in the country, and the third, and the tenth, and the hundredth?
Sure.
Why is being an early mover so important for you?
Well, it's critical in terms of building the necessary relationships with partners. Intel, their education strategist, a great individual by the name of Terry Smithson, told a crowd of citizens in Houston County in January that he's not interested in the second wireless county or the third or you know what have you. He's really only interested in the first. And what they do is they use that first county, that first area, as a proof point. And then scale it all over the country in other communities, and then Houston County becomes the model for all those other communities. And I love Houston County; it's my home, and I can think of nothing better than to have communities all over the country and even the world talk about what we've done and the lessons that we learned and the things that we did right and the mistakes that we made, and use us as a model to move technology forward.
And specifically, and in terms of moving technology forward, what we're talking about now is fixed broadband wireless, but the system is naturally going to evolve into mobile broadband wireless. And how is it that what you do now has an impact on that, and who's going to do it first, and how it's going to be done?
Sure, because I'm involved with the government, and this was really born out of a number of elected officials saying, you know, we like this vision and want it to be our own. We realize that it takes a tremendous amount of time for the government to move on a project like this, sometimes 2 or 3 years.
When you say the government, so, what level are you talking about of the government, or all the government?
Well, really all government, I think, moves pretty slowly, but
right.
but especially state and local government. You know, this is a big project. At least it was when we got started. We thought it was going to cost in the millions of dollars, which would take time to raise through special purpose taxes and things of that nature. And so we wanted to start the process to get the infrastructure in place. You know, figure out what type of vertical real estate we needed, if there were existing tower resources that we could use. You know, go through the vendor selection process, and we've been working with Alverion and just been thrilled with their equipment and with their expertise, but go through these very time-consuming, labor-intensive processes and still be able to be at the front of the line. And it's been really neat in the past year. We have been full steam ahead, and the market for WiMAX has been delayed a little bit, so it puts us even further at the front because we've been doing the right things since day one.
When you look over your shoulder, who do you see chasing you?
Well, when we started, we saw a number of communities. Columbia, South Carolina was one we were really watching, and they got mixed up with some of their telcos and have launched a Wi-Fi network just in their downtown, but they were one that was with us. Allegheny County, Maryland is certainly, they have done some really good things. I tell you, Mark, we don't really like to think of it as a competition.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, all the communities, you know, certainly we want to be first.
Right.
And maybe we will be. We hope that we are. But at the end of the day, there's folks like Jeff Blank in Allegheny County and the mayor of Scottsboro, Indiana, that are doing tremendous things with pre-standard equipment to bring broadband access and wireless to their community. In fact, your question kind of reminds me of something I heard the Vice President of Public Relations at Alvarion say one time, and he said, you know, we have three priorities, but we always have to remember the right order. And the first priority is broadband, the second priority is wireless, and for them, the third priority is Alvarion.
Right.
But you got to remember that as long as we're expanding the reach of digital technology and closing the digital divide, then I think we're all earning a day's keep.
In fact, of course, I think it was Bob Metcalf who said that the value of a network varies as the square of the number of people connected to it.
Exactly.
And
right.
And so if all of the wireless all of the broadband wireless communities start talking to each other, you can share your experiences, you can do business with each other, you can, you know, make friends, whatever you want to do. The more the merrier, essentially.
Right, exactly. And that type of intergovernmental cooperation is going to be required to build a national footprint. And I think that's what we all want, you know, in the next decade, is to be able to have as much wireless broadband access as we do cellular access.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about business models. Apparently the two major ones here are cooperative wholesale and what you call private public, and what Greg Richardson was calling private. Explain what each of those models is, what the Siemens study told the county about it, and where things are moving in those terms now.
Sure. The cooperative wholesale model is a really intriguing model, and I think that over time it may become the front runner model chosen. It involves a municipality or a government body or a group of governing bodies coming together and forming a nonprofit organization or an authority that will build a wireless network and then sell service or provide service at no, you know, at cost without the markup for profit back to the city governments, local governments, hospitals, schools, and those kinds of things. And what that does for elected officials and stewards of public money is it saves a lot of, just a tremendous amount of money. I know up in Allegheny County, they've done that, and they're saving their county $67,000 a month.
Right.
And that's tremendous saving.
This is essentially running the broadband wireless access system like a public utility, like water or electricity, or garbage collection,
but
for that matter.
They're only providing it really to the government.
Okay.
But then, as your question alludes to, there's excess capacity left.
Right.
Well, the city that I represent, we don't have a back office for a technical service like that. We don't want to have truck rolls. That would be just bureaucratic and disastrous.
Right.
So what the cooperative wholesale model recommends is that you basically insource your telecommunications for the government, and then you wholesale the excess capacity
right.
to wireless ISPs and your ILEX and CLEX, and let them go out and compete for the business. And it, in effect, lets you do a couple things. It lets you somewhat set the price, you know, because this nonprofit is in charge of the wholesale price, and the wholesale price determines what the markup's going to be.
Right.
So you can, you know, in some respects, lower tremendously the cost to broadband for your citizenry, which is a very positive thing in bridging the digital divide. The other thing it does is it just creates competition and introduces competition into a part of the market that often is represented by a monopoly with two, you know, a duopoly, I guess is the term, where you've got two players that are taking all the market and not really competing and driving down prices.
That's
definitely not a good situation.
How have people reacted? What in terms of their political views or their comments
sure.
about whether the government ought to be involved in providing an essential service? Even at this level.
It's a controversial debate in Houston County. We are a very conservative county. The governor, the first Republican governor in Georgia since Reconstruction, was just elected 2 years ago, and he is from our county.
All right.
That gives you an idea. We don't think that public government funds should be involved in things the private sector can do. And I knew that was going to be a challenge when Greg and when Siemens recommended it. We knew that was going to be an uphill battle. we view it as a battle worth at least discussing and having a thoughtful conversation with the committee and with the press and with the public. And it's created some hiccups in things, and we've tried to build some consensus.
Has that been,
and that's been difficult.
Have you been getting a discussion? Have you been getting a civil and informed discussion about this, or people just throwing terms around?
it's a little bit of both. We have a newspaper that has not done the project justice really since the beginning, and they've thrown a lot of terms around. And
right.
There's been a lot of hyperbole that's come out of their editorial.
Has the word socialism come up?
Pardon?
Has the term socialism come up?
Well, no. That hasn't come up.
Okay.
But there's, you know, there's our committee. I've been very proud of the work our committee has done.
Right.
With respect to that controversial discussion, we had about a 3-hour meeting about a month and a half ago to really discuss the two recommendations and flesh them out. And some of us didn't agree,
right.
but we moved forward, and now we're actually pursuing both tracks and learning a lot about both and to see what will resolve more quickly.
Okay, tell me about the other track. We haven't
right. The track number two is the private. Recommendation where a group of individuals or businesses would form a consortium
right.
to provide this service and meet different parts of the value chain,
right.
Which we think is important. We see this really as a horizontally integrated approach that's somewhat groundbreaking in the telecommunications industry. We think the day of the vertical integrated approach from a telco that does everything,
right.
We think those days are numbered. And so we have worked hard to build a consortium, and we've talked with some investors and continue those discussions at a very high level. Of course, nothing I can really talk about publicly
okay.
at this point.
But procedure.
We're hoping to be able to make some announcements on one of the two tracks sometime later this month.
Later this month. So hopefully you'll be able to talk to us about it, and we can get the word out to everybody as well.
Absolutely. We'd be glad to do that.
Of course, having that kind of system you mentioned is sort of playing on the strength of the technology of the Internet, which doesn't need to be integrated since it's packet switched, and anybody who is interoperable can switch the packets.
Right.
And therefore, you can have a number of players at a number of levels all cooperating to make it work the same way the Internet works.
Exactly.
On that point, so... What is it that you're going to be deciding, and what are you going to be announcing? You don't have to tell me what it is, but what issues are you going to be addressing in your announcement later this month?
Well, again, you know, the conversations have been preliminary enough that I don't really want to speculate on the specifics of anything, but I'm hopeful that we can at least make an announcement, about some folks who are interested in being involved in providing some funding. And doing some other things, providing some intellectual leadership and resources to help move the project along.
Okay.
Our goal is to have the network, have a commitment to fund the network, either publicly or privately, certainly in the short term, and be able to deploy the network, sometime in the next 6 months.
Oh, okay. I'd like to throw into the mix my own experience in the 80s in Palo Alto, California, where I was involved with the Cable Communications Cooperative of Palo Alto, Inc., which used a cooperative model to have a publicly organization that consisted essentially of the users that bought, owned, and ran the cable system.
Interesting.
And I'll be glad to offline here. I'll be glad to send you more information about that model. Which might because it sounds like you're trying to mix and match as much as you can to get as big a consensus as you can.
That's politics.
Right. And I think it may be that you can have a mixed private public government co-op there that would maybe get so confusing that no one would be able to criticize it. It's one mile. I think
they'll always be critics.
That's how they do it in Congress.
You're right,
I understand. Okay, so what's been your experience in this? Has this raised your visibility? Were you a popular guy already? Are you more or less popular, or both more popular and less popular than you were before you got involved in this?
Who you ask, Mark. I tell you, I'm not a technology person.
Right.
I really politics is my first love.
Right.
But I've gotten very involved. I recently. I began working with the Georgia Department of Education as their wireless coordinator. We're deploying wireless LANs in schools throughout the state.
Right.
And so it certainly helped me get involved in a space that I think is very, very exciting. But at the end of the day, we're committed to helping the citizens, and really helping our businesses and our government save a tremendous amount of money, and just provide that infrastructure that's going to introduce mobility. Not too far from now.
Well, let's say
that's what we're excited about.
Let's say it's 2008 and everything has gone great, and you've figured out the business model, and the systems have been certified, and everything's working, and they're already mobile. Say a little bit about an average day in Houston County, then, and what it'll be like for students and workers and people in their homes and farmers and so on. And what do you envision at the end of at that stage in the evolution of this technology and its deployment?
Sure, I envision technology making our lives better and safer, much more enjoyable. I see a Houston County where all of our police officers have a very small antenna in their police squad car, connected to a laptop or even a tablet PC by then, so that when they pull somebody over, there's an Amber Alert or a missing child or what have you, they can access that information in real time. They can share intelligence in real time. That keeps our citizens and our streets safer, and that's important to us in city leadership. I envision students waking up, accessing the internet, when they get up, getting in the car, riding in with mom to school, and the whole time being on the internet, looking up assignments for homework, being on a blog about the book that they're reading in literature class, and still being able to get things done in an anytime, anywhere learning environment.
Well, let me ask why they're being driven to school if they've got this much information at home.
Well, that's another question that's very interesting. In my capacity with the Georgia Department of Education, one of the things that we're looking at is offering a virtual summer school next year, because summer school is always so difficult to find facilities for and to staff, and then you've got to have support staff, janitors, and security guards and all that, whereas you can eliminate all that and still provide the service virtually.
Well,
technology, that's going to be one of those applications. The most important thing for folks listening, Mark, to realize is it's exciting to talk about a wireless network and mobility and Wi-Fi and WiMAX, but a wireless network is only an enabler of other applications that really start to tangibly change things for us.
Okay, let's talk about work and why people are would people still be driving to work, or they'd be just staying out there in their nice suburban homes.
Well, I think for a while our society is still going to have folks driving to work.
Yeah.
I'm not a futurist, and I don't know how all of this is going to unravel and in what time frame it's going to do that, but I can tell you, you'll be able to go to work and have the same or better speeds and the same or better quality of service that you have now, and your company is not going to be paying as much for that service, which means a couple things. You're going to be working for a company that's going to pay you more because they have more cash flow at the end of the month. They're going to hire more people to get more things done and become more profitable. And then you're going to have new businesses coming in. And that's what's exciting about Houston County and this project, is we feel like once we have this infrastructure in place, we're going to have, this is going to be a cornerstone component of our development, economic development efforts nationally, in terms of bringing in companies, is to be able to say, look at what we've got. Don't you want to do business in a progressive community like ours?
Now again, how is that argument going to hold up if 100 other communities follow your lead and do the same thing?
Sure. Well, I think we're gonna have that unique selling proposition for a short period, and it's gonna be up to us to maximize it. But there's just been a lot of visibility that has come with this project. We've gotten, as a testament to the interview today, we've gotten a lot of publicity in a lot of different e-newsletters and magazines and newspapers around the country.
Right.
And I'm privy to a number of conversations that CEOs of major technology firms have had about this county,
right,
and about our project. And if they're thinking about us and talking about us, then it's not a leap to say, when they're looking for a place in the southeastern region to do business, they're going to remember Houston County and the work that we did.
Are you being invited to speak all around the country and the world yet?
I've been invited to a couple conferences, and I'm cutting my teeth there and enjoying that a lot.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun to travel and meet people and to go to places where everybody's on the same page. The biggest challenge that we found, Mark, is that you have to educate the citizens about the technology and about the applications and about the benefits. And sometimes, folks just miss the big picture, not just in Warner Robins, but I think everywhere. Some folks just don't get what we're trying to accomplish. So it's refreshing to go to conferences and be with people where everybody understands what we're trying to accomplish in the next couple of years.
Okay, now you mentioned that the county has 120,000 residents. I'm here in Los Angeles where the county has 10 million people, roughly 100 times as many. I think that everything that you're doing there would work great here in Los Angeles.
Can you
give me... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The project that we've done is very scalable, and that's why Intel and Alverion and Siemens have been involved, is because this creates a proof point and a process that they can then duplicate very easily by looking at the report that Siemens generated and partnering with some companies to do some things. It doesn't matter how big your county is or how many people live there. This technology will work.
And in fact, it seems to me that the nature of broadband wireless, apart from flooding the network, is that the more people that are within an area, the more crowded it is, the better off you're going to be, the lower the cost per user.
Right.
So if you were able to address the L.A. City Council or the Board of Supervisors here, what would you tell them were the lessons that you've learned so far and the expectations that you have going forward from Houston County that could be applied here in a city, county, community 100 times bigger?
Sure. Well, the first is you know, what I just talked about is that you've got to educate. You've got to spend time educating the citizens and your opinion leaders and thought leaders in the community about the technology. The second thing, you've got to engage your incumbent telcos. They have a tremendous amount of power, especially at the state level, and can very easily outmaneuver you and make it very difficult for a community project to move forward.
Bring
them to the table.
What's the model you use for bringing them to the table and telling them how it's in their interest, if it is, in your opinion, to get involved with this?
Well, what we did is we just simply reached out to the folks who represent the public relations sector of our local telcos and said, we want to meet with you. And we had some of our committee leadership and our state leadership meet with them and say, this is what we're looking at doing. We're not trying to collude to take market share or compete with you. And our position from day one has been that the companies that are best suited to offer this type of service are our incumbent telcos, because they already have an existing customer base they can very easily upsell this service to.
Right.
They've got all the back office, they have the truck rolls, and so we've tried to make the case for the last year that this could really be a profit boon for them. The challenge seems to be that you're talking about, you know, Bell South, and these huge companies that don't make decisions quickly, and again, our main motivator has been being first and being quick.
Right.
And so they've gone through a process, you know, that I'm not really knowledgeable about, but I do think that some of them have done some testing of wireless technology, and we'll see what happens. But they just haven't been on. We haven't shared timelines up to this point, but we tried to cooperate with them and just be open and provide them access to what we're doing.
Because you see, SBC and Verizon are the incumbent providers in California.
Right.
And they've made tremendous investments in DSL and tremendous investments in marketing it. And if you come and say, well, look, here's something that could obsolete DSL, they're going to say, thank you very much. There's the door.
What
strategy? On the other hand, they could wait for someone else to struggle through it and not have enough money, and because they could install it tomorrow if they wanted to.
Sure.
But if they wait for other companies to struggle and then do it and not have enough money and barely get it, but finally it gets up and it works and it does very well, they're going to say, oh, yeah, okay, that's good. We'll go, now we'll do it, and now we'll undercut the prices, and then we'll continue our duopoly through wireless, and the prices won't be lowered that much, and there'll just be another... See, that's what I worry about. The alternative would be to get the county and city of Los Angeles, which are almost as rich and powerful as SBC, to do it, but then they've got all of the complaints that you had about, you know, what's the government doing meddling in the private sector, and people are going to say, people who are just learning what Wi-Fi is, are gonna, what's WiMAX, you know, I can't learn another one. And so any either moral support or technical suggestions about this environment here?
Well, a couple things. First of all, in making the arguments to the telcos, you have to be able to paint the roadmap for them and say, listen, Warner Robins and L.A. County are going to be wireless whether they want it to be or
right.
you or I want it to be
right.
or not.
Okay.
It's coming. It is inevitable with market movers like Intel and Siemens and Alverion pushing it. It's just very simply going to happen. Wireless is becoming more of a culture for Americans than a technology, because it represents freedom and mobility and being able to do what you want when you want it.
When you say that, you mean essentially all of those younger people using cell phones for every kind of thing,
right,
are becoming used to, if not broadband mobility, at least some form of mobility, and therefore they're going to demand that in their data delivery services as well.
Right, exactly. So that's the first thing. The second thing that you mentioned in terms of them coming in and undercutting the competition with prices and whatnot, that's a compelling argument. That's why the cooperative wholesale model works, I think, very effectively. And it's important for folks to realize that of the thousands of smaller broadband wireless deployments that Alverion has done and other companies have done, that are smaller, you know, cover a couple city blocks or what have you, most of those are being funded with public dollars for a variety of reasons. There's some exceptions. Tower Stream up in the Northeast provides service to commercial businesses and does great business. But for the most part, you've got counties and cities that don't have access, that are on that last mile fringe, and invest public dollars to provide a service, and it works very, very well. And so the argument about public funding can be somewhat of a red herring. It has to be. You got to establish some context.
Okay, I don't want to get unrealistic, but you know there may be a change of administration in Washington, mm-hmm. and they may be interested in some of whom may understand WiMAX and say we're going to do pilot projects, you know, in 400 cities or something, and get federal funding for some of this. Is that? I'm sure the people in Houston County might not like that idea, but just on principle, of course.
Just on principle, yes.
But that's another alternative, it seems to me. It seems there must be some way to combine some federal funding, cooperatives, municipal governments, incumbent carriers, new startups, and all of that to give something to everyone, and to get what you said, of course, and we should always remember, is really only a platform. It's not the goal is not to have wireless internet everywhere. The goal is to use the wireless internet for education and business development and other functions.
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that the American culture is going to have to decide, you know, in the 30s during the Depression, we spent billions of dollars on public service projects that have yielded tremendous benefits. I mean, electricity
right.
to every home, and water service and sewer service
right.
to every home. And then in the 50s, we did interstate. That were built for the purpose of national defense and public safety.
Right.
And no one really questions those expenses that the government made, half a century ago. So the decision that we have to make as a culture is, do we regard access, ubiquitous access to information, as that critically important as electricity and water and the interstate?
Well,
that's an intriguing question, because I think, you know, when the internet was first invented, it was called the information superhighway.
Well, when it was first invented,
have that anywhere,
right?
It becomes a very, very powerful proposition.
Well,
in country.
In fact, what you just said, it was a very good analogy with the state highway system, for which billions of dollars of money was spent for state-of-the-art construction of highways, ostensibly to be able to move American troops around fast in the event of some kind of a national disaster or invasion.
Right.
And, in fact, what it did was completely transform travel, transportation, the hotel business, the restaurant business, and a whole lot of other things. And it seems to me that that access to information, broadband, ubiquity. I mean, we just did a test here last week about a dirty bomb going off in San Pedro Harbor. And all the people were there pretending there was a big disaster. Obviously, they all want to have good broadband, ubiquitous communication, so that the police can talk to the fire department and vice versa, and everybody else can watch, and so on. So it seems to me a very persuasive case can be made that there's a homeland security interest in having ubiquitous broadband internet everywhere. Have you run into people proposing that result on that basis?
Well, we do know Project SAFECOM, which is born out of the Department of Homeland Security's effort to make public safety communication interoperable.
Right.
They have are supposed to be offering some substantial grant funding for communities launching community-wide wireless networks for that reason.
Right.
You know, to start doing that. So I think, you know, the model isn't one of, you know, having a, you know, instead of the Department of Transportation to take care of the roads, having the Department of Wireless to take care of a nationwide wireless network. I think it becomes an issue where the government provides grant funding and loans, low-interest loans, through the Rural Utility Service and things like that that help prime the pump of private investment and community leadership and get some things done.
Well, of course, interoperability couldn't be more key to all this. The whole point of having the 802.16 or the .16e standard is so that different companies can make boxes that work with each other.
Exactly.
And so that there become scales of production, and then you put enough money in R&D to get a good product and so on. You'd want to be able to use your handset in Wichita or Warner Robins or Los Angeles, and so it would make sense for the federal government to both fund and encourage the development of interoperable standards, wouldn't it?
Yeah, certainly.
Okay. And they can all call it, they can call them the Houston County standards from now on. All right. So you're going to have an announcement sometime this month about what you're going to do.
That's our hope, yes.
And then presumably you'll start doing it. So let's stay in touch so I can talk to you after you make that announcement, or maybe right before it, and we'll embargo it and put it out first, because you're not the only organization that likes to be a first mover. and you can be the leaders, and we'll be the leaders in covering you.
That sounds great.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Mark.
Next time, maybe, or soon after that, we can be talking on video while you're wandering around wherever you want to be in Houston County.
That's what we're moving towards.
All right. Good.
Thank you to you both.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.